Good morning, Governor. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Joe. Good morning, Governor.
Good morning, Doctor. Now we know what day it is. We're off to a good start.
Yes. Well, that's always good, especially in government.
Yes.
And we thank you so much for doing this. So are you ready to speak, or do you have something prepared that you'd like to say from the stage?
Yes, I'd actually like to make an opening statement. It's about 14 minutes. Would you mind?
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'd much rather be on rebuttal, Alan.
Okay, so Governor, President Trump blasted New York City last night for being a sanctuary city, claiming that led to the death of a 92-year-old woman. What's your reaction?
You know, Alan, I think we just have we bring a different frame than the president brings. We think that he's going to do a State of the Union address and it's going to speak to the situation that the country is in. He's going to reach out to the legislature. I don't think he sees it that way. This is a different kind of presidency. It's a different kind of president. I think he sees it as, I have 1 hour of national TV time. Let me put on a Donald Trump show. And that's what it was. It was a Donald Trump show, right? He's very good at reality TV. We know that. And he had these very moving moments and visuals. There were no facts. You know, he distorted the way he always distorts. He makes things up. But it was a TV show produced by Donald Trump. And that's what he's done with his entire presidency. So are there facts? No, there are no facts. But, you know, we're in an age of politics where facts, numbers, this is all second. You know, this is the age of Twitter and Instagram and viral tweets, and everything is superficial. So you can't have a factual discussion, right? He pledges pre-existing illnesses will be covered. Meanwhile, he's suing in court. I think it's a trap to try to say, well, what was right or wrong? It's TV. It was the Donald Trump show.
So let me ask you this, Governor, and I hope you don't take offense at this, but you gave a State of the State address. You put the best face on things that you possibly could. So what's the difference?
Oh, I had facts. I speak about policy. It's not a political theater. It's not a rally to rev up the party faithful at the expense of the rest of the people in the state. It's night and day. I respect government. I'm a student of government. I respect government administration. I've studied it all my life. I respect what government can do, and I disrespect when government acts poorly. He has no respect for government. He was never a government professional. It's all theater for him. It's public relations, and that's what he knows, and that's what he's done, and that's his reality TV show. And unfortunately, as the world has turned, his political theater resonates with a percentage of the people. But it's a totally different exercise, Alan. He's not going to debate policy with you. He's not going to talk through nuance of what's right or what's wrong. It's the Donald Trump show. And shame on the rest of us for thinking it's going to be anything else. That's what he does. It made him president, and that's what he's going to continue to do.
I would agree with that. So I guess I want to ask you about what the news media is reporting. And they're reporting over and over again that Speaker Pelosi ripped up the president's speech on our morning program on WAMC. You know, people said that was disrespectful. She shouldn't have done it. I disagreed, of course. I thought if ever we had to fight like hell, this is the time. And that was largely symbolic. So what do you think?
I think it was largely symbolic. And I think it's emblematic of the times. Who turns their back on someone who wants to shake hands? I mean, where are we? Here at the State of the Union, the coming together, all branches of government, just have the patina of respect and comedy and collegiality. You turn your back on a person who wants to shake hands, and then from Speaker Pelosi's point of view, you give a political demagogic speech in her chamber in what was supposed to be the State of the Union. And yes, it was a sign of disgust, but I think that was felt by millions of Americans who were watching the performance. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So let me switch subjects now. We had the Iowa results, or so-called Iowa results. You know, the Democrats were seen as being ineffective and even being able to do that. You got a reaction to that?
I think it was very bad for the Democrats. First, why do you still have Iowa as the first state with the caucuses? Iowa is not representative. The caucuses are not representative. You could go back to that. But then second, not to be able to conduct the election. See, I believe that the Achilles heel for Democrats is incompetence. Our vision is right, Alan. It was right when JFK spoke about it and LBJ spoke about it and Mario Cuomo spoke about it. Our Achilles heel is people basically say, yes, but you can't do what you're suggesting you can do. And when you Democrats actually go to implement something, it winds up worse. That's why I have very little patience for incompetent Democratic government. It plays to our fundamental weakness. You just can't do it. Yes, I'd like to give affordable housing to people, but look at what you did with public housing. You wound up ruining neighborhoods. It was expensive. You just fail to achieve. You fail to complete. You are vision without reality. That's the knock on us. And then the first Democratic race, you can't count the votes. You know, it was just playing to that negative stereotype. I think it was very bad.
So have you any way of telling your fellow Democratic leaders about your feelings about their inability to produce?
Oh, yes. I'll tell anybody who speaks with me. I'm going down to Washington this weekend to the National Governors Association, not the Democratic Governors Association. But the Democratic governors will be there also. I'm going to see Speaker Pelosi there. We have a program together. So yes, you know, it's and I don't think I'm alone in this. But I feel it. I've felt it all my life. You know, there's not an audience who, after a great Democratic vision, doesn't stand up and cheer, right?
Right.
Mario Cuomo's vision was cheered by Democrats and independents and moderate Republicans always. Same with many great Democrats. Well, then why haven't we gotten there? Because they don't believe that when we go to implement that vision governmentally, it works. And crime and up and homeless is up and affordable housing doesn't work and public education is expensive and not producing. You know, that's the rap. And when you flag for the nation in an indefensible exercise that got totally befuddled everyone. I mean, it just plays right to that.
So let me ask you this. President Trump says it's the strongest economy in memory with the lowest unemployment rate in 50 years. You proposed a $178 million budget plan with the state facing a $6 billion budget shortfall. So, why is the state in the red when the economy is so strong?
First, he said he has the strongest economy in history. Okay, I say this. I have blonde hair, blue eyes, and a little button nose, Alan. That's what I say. Okay? Take both statements at face value. Our state economy is also doing very well. We have record low unemployment. Upstate unemployment is way down. Highest number of private sector jobs in history. The deficit is attributable primarily to the increase in Medicaid costs above budgeted amounts. We budget for about 3% increase in Medicaid. It's gone up at about 7%. That is an unsustainable rate of increase, and it's unnecessary. It's just improper administration of the program. And that's what we have to tackle this year, and we are tackling it this year.
Well, you're putting it on the backs of the counties, though. Well, the counties have to provide the service. Won't poor people suffer?
No, we're not at all. We're not at all doing that. As a matter of fact, we've done the exact opposite, which may have been compounding our issue. We said 5 years ago, we will pay the county's share right. of increased cost in Medicaid. In other words, we've held them harmless for 5 years. We pay the entire additional cost every year. They're at a flat rate now. They're paying the same rate they paid 5 years ago. And we're saying we will continue to hold you harmless and we'll pay the entire increase. But you have to keep the increase down to 3% because they do important administrative functions on the county level. They're doing the entitlement determination. They're checking the finances to make sure the person is actually income eligible. They're determining if it's a nursing home or home care, what the level of home care is, how long. So we're saying to them, we'll continue to pay, but you have to administer it at no more than 3% growth. And anything under 3% will give you 25% of the savings. But if you go over 3%, you have to pay the cost over the 3%. So all we're saying is they have to have some financial accountability. And what happened is since they're no longer paying the increased cost, you lost the financial incentive for them to run the program well. In the old days, Alan, they paid 25% of the increase. So every dollar, they were 25 cents on that dollar. That's gone. And we have to reinstitute that financial incentive and disincentive. Run it at 3%, we'll pay everything. Over 3% you pay. Under 3%, you get 25% of the savings.
Okay, so I want to ask you this, following up on that, and I just wondered whether you chickened out. You know, you developed this Medicaid redesign team charged with finding $2.5 billion in Medicaid savings before the next fiscal year, April 1st. What happens if you don't like what they say?
Well, we did this before. We're running a play that worked before. Handoff up the right side.
Yeah.
We've scored with it before. We're running the same play. We had an MRT, Medicaid redesign team, when I first came in, because there's two ends to this. Yes, the counties have to have a financial incentive and a disincentive. Also, the industry itself has to reduce the waste and the inefficiency. And that's what the MRT is. It's the industry itself. And put them in a room and close the door and say, we can't have 7% growth. It's not in your interest either. It is unsustainable. We love our healthcare system. We're up to about 96% of New Yorkers have health coverage. That's amazing, mm-hmm. Alan.
Yeah.
You could not have envisioned that 10 years ago. So great. Now we have to make sure it's sustainable. And if we want to keep our hospitals and our nursing homes and our healthcare employees, it can't be 7% growth. It's just not economically feasible. They have to find inefficiencies and waste, and that's what the MRT does. So it's both ends. The counties have financial incentive, disincentive at the 3%. MRT, put the industry in a room. You have to figure out where we can save money. And both of those I feel confident about. Again, we've done this before, and it's relatively isolated to the Medicaid issue. I'll tell you what, going back to the Trump and the age of theater and lack of substance in discussion, we are going to pass this budget. Everybody talks about Medicaid. We'll handle the Medicaid issue. In this budget, Alan, we have some of the most aggressive policy changes that I've made in my term, and no one's talking about them. You know, we have in this budget the most aggressive climate change program in the United States of America, $33 billion. We propose an environmental bond issue to go on the ballot this November. Paid sick leave is proposed in this budget, where a person would get 5 paid sick days. Marijuana legalization is in this budget. The vaping laws.
How do we know you're for real on the marijuana thing? And as long as you've raised it, Governor, I don't want to give you a hard time here, but you know, you've been talking marijuana reform for a while. Now it's in the budget. You know, meanwhile, as I've said to you so often, here we are in Massachusetts making out like bandits because all the New York guys are coming over here. Can we really believe you on this?
See, I used to be sensitive. And if somebody said, how do we know we can believe you? See, in the old days, now, Mario Cuomo, if you said that to Mario Cuomo, you would know that that would get a bristle and he would rise to the bait.
Quite right.
But I have a thicker skin. I'm self-disciplined. I'm going to just allow that to go. Yes, you can question my credibility. That's fine. Give me a Medicaid bill. I'll sign it today. Pass the bill today. I will sign it today. I can't be any clearer than that. So we have to get it passed. Now, I'm fully supportive. I run in New York State. I'm confident that the people of New York State support this position. It is not popular in every part of the state. And then it is a different calculus when it has to be passed in the Assembly and the Senate. But if the bill is passed, I will sign it today, Alan. How's that?
No, that's good.
Definitive enough?
Somehow it just isn't getting done. You know, there are those people who want to smoke weed and have to go to Massachusetts to do it.
Well, it has to get passed. You know,
well,
it has to get passed, and it's not an easy vote. You know,
not so easy? You are a brilliant politician. You know, you get what you want. Come on, you get what you want. You're a tough guy, and I can't believe you're saying it's tough to pass because, you know, they'll do what you want, and it's popular in New York. You know that.
They don't do what I want. That is such an oversimplification as to be infuriating. But again, I'm not going to be infuriated because...
Don't get infuriated.
I'm not infuriated.
Well, okay, now let's go to the toll evasion on the highways. You want to make that a misdemeanor. Somebody wrote that to me and said, is this a tax on the poor?
No. How is it a tax on the poor? I could be a toll evader.
Yeah.
You could be a toll evader. Anyone could be a toll evader. If you evade your toll and I have to pay your toll, I'm unhappy with that. I don't want to pay your toll, Alan, so we're clear.
No, I agree with you, but I'm not the questioner here. But I do want to say that probably people who jump over turnstiles and people who evade tolls are quite frequently the poorest among us. And that's why I think the question is being asked.
You know, you could be a toll. No, it's toll evasion. You know, there have to be certain laws and certain rules that we have to follow so we don't descend into chaos. If you are not paying your highway toll, you know, we've gone to electronic tolling almost all across the state, it's been great on a number of levels. But people have to pay their tolls, and it's unfair to have anybody pay your toll for you. You just socialize the loss And if you wanted to come up with a policy that said, look, incomes below X get free highway tolls, you know, you could do that. But do that. Just don't say it's a mayhem, and whoever wants to avoid a toll, just avoid the toll.
Is it a big problem?
It's a growing problem. See, when you go to the electronic tolling, you'd have fewer personnel at the toll booths. The Robert Moses was the first to put armed toll takers at the toll booths. Robert Moses really mastered project financing by the revenues from a project. Triborough Bridge Tunnel Authority. So he would build a project. You then had to pay a toll. Those toll revenues went to his authority. And he put armed personnel because you had to pay the toll. We're now the other way, right? We're doing electronic tolls. Nobody's going to step out with a firearm to stop you, right? But you have to make sure you have a system in place where people are going to actually pay.
And what if they don't pay with the electronic? How do you get them? In other words, you send them a letter, you say, you owe us this. They don't respond. What happens then?
Well, that's right. That's the situation you're in. They don't respond. They don't respond. They don't respond. We say at one point that is a criminal misdemeanor.
Can you go to jail for that?
No one's going to go to jail for non-payment of tolls, but there has to be a sanction. Otherwise, nobody will pay.
We here at WMC ran a story this week about Assemblywoman Linda Rosenthal's effort to ban the sale of some animals at pet stores to cut down on puppy mills. You were quoted as saying it sounded, quote, a little silly. Why is it a bad idea?
Bad quote. Bad quote. Bad reporting. Repetition of bad reporting, Alan Shartok. Guilty.
Not me. I'm just reading the questions. Okay.
No, you are repeating bad reporting.
Okay.
And
you never said
it? I believe
it?
A reporter
right.
who repeats bad reporting should be held responsible and liable for the original bad reporting.
Should it be a misdemeanor?
Yeah, it should be a misdemeanor. There was bad reporting. You repeated the bad reporting, and then say, oh, it wasn't me. It was somebody else.
So you
no,
said
you repeated
wait,
it.
Wait,
you
so,
own it once you repeat it.
But you said, Governor, what I read was it sounded a little silly. Is that wrong? You didn't say that?
What actually happened in reality, I was at a press conference on the coronavirus.
Right.
And we were talking about the coronavirus, which is very serious, obviously, and how many people were infected and what we're doing about it. And a reporter said something to the effect of, this sounds like a silly question, but what is your position on rabbit and puppy sales?
Right.
I said, I didn't see the bill, but you're right. It sounds like a silly question. Ha, 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 ha.
I get it. Okay, fair enough. Now, you want to merge the New York State Thruway Authority with the Bridge Authority. Some people in the Hudson Valley don't like this. Why did you include this in your budget?
Savings, efficiency, economies of scale, two agencies doing the same thing. Why do we have two agencies, two heads, two cars, two offices, two Xerox machines, two of everything? Why not save the taxpayer money, do it better, do it faster, do it more efficiently?
Okay, so just so you know that there are all of these authorities, and they're off budget and all the rest of it. Should we be getting rid of some of those authorities?
Yes, we should try. But then somebody will say what you just said, which is the people don't want to lose their bridge authority. Yeah, each authority has its own constituency, right? It has its own workforce. It has its own leadership. It has its own union. And it's much easier said than done. I am all for it. The flip side of railing against incompetent government is I take pride in the government that we operate. Always can do more, certainly. But I take pride in saying the government works well and it performs well. So on the situation of Thruway Authority and Bridge Authority, they're doing the same basic thing. You're running the thruway, you're running roads, you're running bridges, you're doing maintenance, you're clearing snow, you're setting tolls. Why not consolidate like functions to reduce the cost? Flip side is, well, people who now have the bridge authority want the separate authority because they feel it is closer to them or whatever the rationale.
They've got cars and drivers too.
Yeah, no, it's hard. But yes, we are constantly trying, and I'm constantly trying. And sometimes we're successful, and sometimes we live to fight another day.
Now, your budget director suggested yesterday on WNYC radio that a millionaire tax could lead more rich people to leave the state. Why can't New York increase taxes on people who can afford it to help with the budget shortfall? In other words, more millionaires.
Yeah. First of all, we do not have a shortfall issue primarily. It's $6 billion deficit, but it's not about a shortfall. It's about an unsustainable rate of increase in Medicaid. If we could pay the 7% increase for Medicaid, I would still say the same thing, Alan, is you can't pay 7% this year and then 7 or 8 mm-hmm. next year and 8 or 9 the following year. You have to get these costs you have to get this rate of increase under control.
Okay, you said that, but what about taxing the rich? Isn't that a good idea? If somebody's making, you know, $5 billion a year or several million dollars a year, why not tax them?
I know it sounds good. The flip side is you have a tax problem in this state today, not of our own doing. I have cut taxes on every level or kept them the same. But the federal government, when they took mm-hmm. away the SALT deduction, yep. dramatically increased taxes.
Okay.
Dramatically increased property taxes, which are the worst tax, and increased state income tax by reducing the deduction. And that is a major problem for us.
I only have 1 minute here, maybe a minute and a half. We know that the president's going to be acquitted in the Senate today. I'm a little bit afraid of what happens in a second term, if he wins a second term, that we really are in a big problem area because there will be nothing holding him back.
Well, first, quick aside, and we have the second highest millionaire's tax in the United States, Alan. Second
okay.
highest millionaire's tax in the United States.
Yep.
On the President Trump, I couldn't agree with you more. If he is reelected, and that's why I think the whole focus has to be this man cannot get reelected. If he is reelected, after what he has done, the Trump theater, total abuse of power, the disrespect for the Constitution and the balance of power, if you think these 4 years were bad, the next 4 years will be even worse. And that's why I think the goal, the focus has to be singular. He cannot win reelection.
Is there a way to stop that in the next minute?
Not in the next minute.
No,
but luckily, we have a little more time on the clock.
Yeah. All right. Well, Governor Andrew Cuomo, what a great thing that you come on and you talk to us and you kid around, but you don't kid around. And that, to me, is the mark of a good guy. So thank you so much for being with us. And when we talk to you the next time, we'll try to come up with some more challenging questions. Thanks again.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you.